Welcome back to Legends and Lore. I am Renazuo with my fellow lore keeper here, Tom Sweeney. This week we don't have the typical cold intro because we have something better, an actual guest. Our friend Michael, who runs our D&D campaign over at Lore and Order, known as the Angry Philosopher on Drugs on Twitter. And it turns out he's actually a philosopher and theologian. I just learned this before I hit the record button, so that's pretty cool. Say hello.
Hello. Yes, I am indeed a philosopher, among other things. I went to college, I got a degree, I'm allowed to call myself that.
There you go.
And the reason we've got Michael on the podcast this week, or whichever, how long has it been, actually? Several weeks.
It's been
for this episode, let's say, is because this episode we are talking about Waterdeep. And Lore and Order takes place in the city of Waterdeep.
It mm-hmm. does indeed.
We are smack dab in the crime mecca of Waterdeep.
Now, for people who are jumping into this, would you like to tell everyone what Waterdeep is, where it's located, your general synopsis? If you were to give it to us as players, how would you give us the lay of the land for Waterdeep?
Well, it's funny. I was having a discussion about this just a couple of days ago on a map making stream, and we generally came to the conclusion Waterdeep is the Los Angeles of the Forgotten Realms. It's probably the biggest, brightest, shiniest city in the north, and it's definitely the most progressive, multicultural, splendiferous, and it also has like that very two-layer system where there's there's the rich and the famous and the powerful living up on the hills in Hollywood. There's all the spectacular parties and not quite movies, but similar things. And then underneath, you peel that back and you've got crime, destitution, poverty. You've got all the people who are struggling day to day so that all the people on top can continue living these wonderful lives.
Mm.
Seems very Dungeons and Dragons. I love it. I love it.
So before we started playing in this campaign, Sween, were you very familiar with Waterdeep?
I was familiar with Waterdeep as far as going into like the Mad Mage, obviously the D&D campaign for 5e. I knew a bit about Lost Mine, I didn't take there. I knew about it mostly because of Laurel Silverhand, of course. She's like one of the children of the chosen of Mistra, and then she ended up being native to Waterdeep. So I knew a bit about her from that. I knew about the world from that. I also knew about Xanathar's gang being like huge and super detrimental and terrible in Waterdeep as well. So I had some sort of understanding of the general area.
I gotcha. Michael, when you were setting up a campaign, were you just like, I want to do a campaign in Waterdeep, or were you like, I want to do this campaign, and then you had to think about like what brought you to Waterdeep? What was the process like?
It was the oddest thing. I was down at the local game store, Hall of Heroes, and they were selling game mats. They had some place from Eberron, they had like the 10 towns in Icewind Dale, and they had Waterdeep. And so the character I was playing in the campaign down there at the time, I was playing two campaigns, but the one on Sunday, his backstory is from Waterdeep. That's where he got into the City Watch. That was sort of how he got up to becoming from commoner to level one adventurer. And so I was like, I need the Waterdeep map. And as I unrolled it on the table, I was like, this is too big to use. But I was just all at once, just like so many streets and alleyways and little pockets. And for someone like me, you know, you see that every little alleyway tells a story. Every every little place. Like you see a little cul-de-sac somewhere, and you're like, that, cul-de-sacs equal small communities generally. There's a whole region called the City of the Dead. People go there for picnics, and what's that about? And I started imagining what it would be like to live in a space like that. And it had been a dream of mine for a while to run a campaign for some guys who I knew who were in the military, and the idea of like a special forces team played with guys who actually are into tactics and infiltration, that sort of stuff. The two sort of came together, and I thought, well, let's have the city watch, and let's throw them in the middle of something, and as a result of that, spoilers, but we're going to turn them into some sort of experimental task force. So,
Yeah,
you
because
guys are
right now
towards
we're
the end
gonna,
of. Sorry, go on.
right now we're kind of following the police procedural route, which is what got me because I have seen every episode of Law and Order, including the Law and Order movie, and
You've seen
so
every episode?
every episode of every Law and Order that has ever come out.
How many episodes is that? Like a
It's
thousand?
a lot. I'd actually have to go back and count them, but the original Law and Order series, I want to say, was created in the late 80s. And so I've watched all of that one because at one point they had it all on Netflix and I watched it all. I've seen all of SVU, Criminal Intent, the Trial by Jury, even though it sucks. And then they've got I've seen Law and Order Los Angeles, and then they've got this new one, Organized Crime, which I think is probably one of the best ones right now, but
That is insanity.
I think the police procedural came in when I combined the idea of I want to do something in Waterdeep with I want a special task force type campaign. And so, I think just last year I finished watching The Mentalist, for example, which is a really fantastic example of a police procedural, but then someone with sort of really out there fantastic abilities. And what if everybody on The Mentalist had their own set of fantastic abilities? So that's how we sort of got, like, obviously we're still just finishing up the prologue, the Night of Madness, where you guys completely abandon your post, and thank God you did. Or else the story would have been over really quickly. But
Well,
they
technically
stayed at their
we were on
post.
overtime. We were on
You're
overtime.
on
We were on
overtime.
overtime.
You're gonna have to fill your sheets in, put the cover sheets on the TPS reports. It's gonna be great. And so, yeah, it really came from I had this idea about wanting to create a campaign that was considerably more intelligent, like tactical in how you approach some of your, like, let's not have people go in blind. Let's have people going in with a bunch of intel, but that intel means we can raise the stakes, we can make things more complicated, and really just play with those standard formulas that we're used to seeing in D&D. It's always you play the adventurers, you try not to piss off the town guard, you're kicking down doors and rampaging through sewers and dungeons and villas and old castles. And what if we just flipped all that on its head? And you're playing the town watch, you're kicking down doors, but you're also having to plan your points of entry, and not just like, oh, we kicked down the door, there's six goblins in here, okay, everybody charge, slash and hack until one side's dead.
So when it comes to Waterdeep, we're going to kind of dig into a little bit of how Waterdeep is put together because I want to say it's got to be one of the biggest, if not the biggest, cities in all of D&D. I can't think of many other cities. There are a few that come to mind.
I can think of like two that might be bigger.
Yeah,
I think of Sharn in Eberron and maybe Sigil or Baldur's Gate.
Oh yeah, Sigil is probably bigger, and I'm surprised at how many people don't know what sigil is, but I definitely want to do an episode on sigil, so I won't get into it too much. But sigil is wild, so.
Sigil is wild, but it's also sort of like in Eberron. It's a different setting, and it's not one that you'll be able to visit one day in your travels as your standard adventurer. Waterdeep is like the it's the big shining city. It's the city of hopes and dreams, etc. Yeah. And I think it's one of the oldest cities in terms of content produced by TSR and later Wizards.
Mm-hmm. Really? That's crazy. Yeah, it's got to be one of the oldest ones. It's definitely got to be in like the top five. Mm-hmm. But it's got like crazy, like it goes way back. So as I also learned this recently, because I thought this was something that a DM in the past had sort of homebrewed, but apparently, Waterdeep actually is a spell jamming port.
It is indeed.
I knew that, actually. That's one thing I'm proud I knew.
I thought that was a homebrew thing in a different campaign that I played in when I was in like high school a long time ago. And then, you know, I'm going through, I'm reviewing the information for Waterdeep. This was like a couple of weeks ago. And it was like, oh yeah, it's the biggest spell jammer port in Faerun. And I'm like, fucking what?
Are you the what?
It's really, really weird.
Yeah, spell there jamming, are like, when you realize how big it is, like when you realize how spell jamming is like really a proper thing in D&D, it kind of gets weird. Like, what? People kind of know about this?
Mm-hmm. There are laws in Waterdeep, like specific departments to deal with it, stating that, you know, Waterdeep is a no-fly zone for spelljammer ships. They have to land a certain distance away and then travel over the water.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise, you know, and I'm sure you'll probably run into a couple of crazy old coots who are like, there are aliens among us. I've seen the spaceships. And, you know, in character, you guys are going to be like, oh, you're a lunatic. And you pair are going to be like, I mean, he's not wrong.
Technically, he is correct.
But we don't know this in character, and it sounds pretty far-fetched, which is weird, you know, because you're dealing with things from the plane of fire. You're dealing with cultists of Vecna. You're dealing with, like, literal outsiders. Spaceships, apparently, is where we draw the line.
Yeah, that's just where it's crazy.
This is not okay.
It's actually, you know, that was, that sounds very similar to an argument I had about the fourth Indiana Jones movie, actually, because at the weekend it came out, I know I'm kind of getting off into left field here. The weekend it came out, some guys that I worked with, I was working at Staples in Boston at the time, and these guys were just like, come on, aliens? Aliens, really? That's just too much. I'm like, hold up. Like, we're talking about like a cup that can extend your life indefinitely, other cups that can melt your face off, or rapidly age you. The Ark of the Covenant is the thing that like melts your face off or explodes your head. And then you've got a dude who just says Kali Ma a bunch of times and can rip your fucking heart out. But we're drawing the line at aliens? Really?
It's crazy where people draw their lines, man. I love it. I love where people draw their lines for like, that's ridiculous.
I'm a level with you from a narrative standpoint. I'm on the other dude's side.
Here's why, right?
Like, look, Ark of the Covenant, Raiders of the Lost Ark, and the Last Crusade, they all have that Judeo-Christian background, right? Mm-hmm. Now, Temple of Doom is obviously like some sort of weird-ass witchcraft sorcery, but that's, you know, there's a consistency with that. That sort of shit can coexist with Christianity or the Christian mythos if you're not a Christian. Probably the term you would use. Aliens just sort of comes out of left field. So you're like, you know, you've got this like historical mythos involving your knights and the Cup of Christ and the Ark of the Covenant and then the Inca space aliens.
I understand.
You know, so narratively speaking, they're like, we're just going to change gears into neutral, and we're going to switch off the engine. We're in this car now.
I've always understood that. Like, I get where you're coming from. Like, I get it. Like, yes, this is a bit more bananas.
They went from fantasy to science fiction, I guess. It was a genre shift for a lot of people. And as usual, I just overthink it.
I was done with it. I was like, that's fine.
for me, my sticking point for that movie was putting CG where CG wasn't needed. Mm-hmm. You know?
Star Wars.
Yeah, so it's basically Lucas got his fingers all over it, and now we've got CG monkeys, CG ants, CG prairie dogs. It's like, dude, we don't need that stuff. But yeah, like I said, left field. But when you mentioned the aliens thing, I immediately flashed back to that point in time. Okay, so Waterdeep.
We're playing with genres as is, you know. We're introducing Waterdeep is traditionally high fantasy, and I want to crossbreed that pretty heavily with urban fantasy. You know, your Dresden Files, Anita Blake, stuff like that.
I agree. I like that. I like that combination. I've always been more of a scale person. Like it's gotta creep up into being like really crazy. Big scale stuff. That's like what I really enjoy. Yeah. And I like the fact that the Waterdeep that you're running for us is very much so like pace by pace. This happens and then this gets a little more crazy. And eventually, like, because you've already shown us, like in our campaign, we've been shown that Force Grey is there. So we do know that things get pretty crazy because they're fighting some sort of gigantic monster in city at the moment while we're doing what we're doing.
Yeah, well, again, that's sort of part of the inversion, because you imagine Force Grey is fighting some weird shadow serial killer monster thing who incidentally kills on the nights of the new moon. This is not the night of the new moon. This is very much the opposite part of the lunar calendar. This is the full moon. Yeah, I think everyone's been a little too like following the narrative to realize, hang on a minute, that's a bit odd. And we might even do a quick nature roll for Cave later, just be like, hang on a minute, hang on, something's amiss here. But, you know, traditionally you expect Force Greys fighting this big shadow demon monster serial killer something. That's where the action would be. And like, no, that's in the background now.
Yeah,
we're not dealing with that. We're dealing with the people with the boots on the ground, and we're gonna, you know, see if we can't expand that sphere of radius out until suddenly you're like, oh, hang on, we are the guys in the center stage, and when did we get here? You know, like rather than just being slapped in the face with it, we want to build up gently to it.
Mm-hmm.
I like it.
And so, do you think that during the course of the game, I imagine we would, because we're Town Watch, which or not Town Watch, City Watch.
City Watch. Yeah. Yep.
And so we're probably going to come up against, you know, people in government, aristocracy, things like that. Mm-hmm. Is there anything notable, without giving us any sort of spoilers? Instead, like, is there something notable about those aspects of Waterdeep that you could say might play a part, or maybe just interests you, something that you're drawn to in that area? Because you were mentioning how you've got the upper crust and then you've got the people down below. So
there's
going to be, as the City Watch, you get to kind of like move between the two to a certain extent, because you're dealing with all of them.
You guys are going to be essentially the face of the government in many ways. You already are, as a City Watch, to the people in your neighborhoods, the people in the patrols that you guys would have been doing prior to the night of the full moon. You are the face of Waterdeep to the citizens that, you know, you walk past the same houses every day, you see the same faces every day. They might know you by name sometimes, but they see the uniform and they go, yeah, that's the city. you know, the popo, they're the man.
The fuzz.
Yeah, you guys are the fuzz.
We are 12. We are the 12. We are the...
I am the law.
Although I kind of wonder how many of us are going to be still on the force by the time, you know, we get a few sessions further along.
I know I'm not going to make it, but I'm going to have a good fucking time while I'm there.
you're not in for a long time. You're in for a good time.
Exactly. Well, that, you know, is the that was my motto from birth. Cruising.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. My next question, I didn't want to hit this too early on, but okay. You mentioned the City of the Dead area that they have where people are going and mm-hmm. having picnics or whatever. Is that something that specifically, is that like your favorite ward of Waterdeep, or was that just kind of like the quirkiest one?
It's definitely the quirkiest. It would be hard to say what my favorite ward is. It's such a stereotypical answer, I know, but they're all so unique that they have different aspects about them. And, you know, because right now you guys are just, you're stuck in the Southern Ward. It's where you're posted. It's where some of you have been busted down to, or you just couldn't get any better stations. So, you know, I've been deep diving so deep into the Southern Ward. Right now, I would say it's my favorite because there's so much history there. And there's going to be so much history in the Dock Ward or in the Trades Ward. And the further north you go, the richer it gets socioeconomically. But in terms of lore and history, the whole place is just an absolute treasure trove. For people who have done deep dives into Waterdehavian lore, they will recognize some of the NPCs that crop up, if not directly, then indirectly. Mm-hmm. So the well, I've already dropped the name Turgon Haggerson.
Mm-hmm.
And Turgon Haggerson is actually the son of Hagar Klutwigson, who featured in Waterdeep City of Splendor, which is, I believe, third edition, if not second.
Mm-hmm. That sounds like third edition to me, but I could be wrong. You've also mentioned the Blackstaff, too, I think.
Yep.
In the last session, you were talking about the Blackstaff.
So our most recent Blackstaff appeared in one of the novels. Now, I haven't gotten into the novels yet, which is a shame. Because there's a lot of lore there, although most of the important parts of that find their way into the Forgotten Realms wiki, which has just been an absolute lifeline. But, you know, I've been slowly getting all the lore books from the D&D, the DMs Guild.
Yeah, so for people who haven't gone and checked this out themselves on the Forgotten Realms wiki and stuff like that, mm-hmm. Waterdeep is so large that each of the individual wards and things that are like ward-like but not official wards, each one has its own page on the wiki as if it's its own city. So, and then it'll sit there and tell you like, this is what people in the area call it, because it's very much just this massive metropolis. So while we're calling it the Southern Ward or whatever, people who live there are just going to call it South. You know,
they might. That changes then, from era to era as well.
Yeah. Ooh. And then the other name that they have for it is like the Caravan City, because that's where a lot of people come in from the south. Mm-hmm. Caravans, merchants, things like that. But the overall area is much more run down. It's dirtier, it's muddier, and it's one of the main reasons why the character I'm playing, Charisse, does not want to be there.
Yeah, Waterdeep is kind of filthy. I love it. I love the character that exudes from the grime and gunk that is Waterdeep.
I very much want each ward to have a life of its own, and the life of the Southern Ward is very much a bacterial kind of life, you know?
Bacterial kind of life. I like that.
I love that.
So, yeah, I just, when you mentioned the City of the Dead, I thought that was really cool that, you know, this is a place where people go on picnics. It's like
Central Park. With, you know, we have a big graveyard here in Sydney called Rookwood. It's its own postcode and suburb. It's that big. I don't know if you have anything like that in the States, but yeah, imagine a whole suburb that is a graveyard with a layer of like Central Park thrown over the top. And I mean Central Park cool. because it has its own ecosystem and you do not want to be in there after dark.
Mm-hmm.
That's Central Park for you right there. As a New Yorker, that is just when it gets to nighttime, just don't be at Central Park. That's pretty much all it is.
Yeah, I'm surprised. Like, I haven't lived in New York. I've only been there briefly when I was a kid, but after watching every episode of Law and Order, I know that no one has any business jogging through Central Park at night. Like, why? Why are you doing this? So many of these episodes end up in tragedy. You know, it's like you get the cold open and they find, you know, some poor son of a bitch over in the bushes just completely fucked up. And they're like, oh, yeah, he was out for a jog in Central Park. It's like
hearing that is such a harrowingly cynical feeling you gain. Because you're just like, I don't give a fuck. There's no reason you should be there. I can't feel bad for you. I can't.
Catch me out here writing notes. Jogger, Central Park, City of the Dead.
Jogger, Central Park, midday.
Yeah. There's... excuse me. Yeah, there is... it's a lot of stuff. I'm really surprised how much stuff I'll... Like, begins or ends depending on which Law and Order it is in Central mm-hmm. Park. It's like, man, I'm almost afraid, like, if I were to visit New York, I'm almost afraid to visit there during the day.
That's so ridiculous. That's so, like, not to discredit what you feel, but it's just like, I'm afraid to visit this city in bright daylight because of all the stuff that happens in daylight. It's like nighttime's so much worse.
So when it comes to City of the Dead, mm-hmm. They use it kind of like a park, like you said. It's you can't go into it at night. Mm-hmm. And it's got a lot of really cool stuff on it. I'm running through the thing here and I'm just like, it's so impossible to cover this because within the wiki, you have the article for the City of the Dead. And then each of those individual places, you've got individual crypts, tombs, vaults, all that shit that have mm-hmm. their own stories and character to them. There's a mausoleum called the House of the Homeless, for instance, that has a portal in it that goes to an endless crypt.
Spoilers.
And I'm like, okay, so I see that. And then I'm like, wait a minute. I thought they said earlier in the article that they ran out of room in this graveyard as the city was getting bigger. How did they run out of room if they've got portals to endless crypts somewhere? Like, how is that a thing?
I mean, they ran out of, like, space there in the material realm, but they had to get a portal to somewhere else.
It must have been something that they came up with as a solution after... so they were... The cemetery was part of the city. It serviced the city when the city was really small. And when they mm-hmm. started running out of room, they started actually going and burying people in an alley. It was a grave alley yep. or Ilisar's alley or whatever it's called. And mm-hmm. they would go in and under the cobblestones, they would put the coffins in there vertically.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, for some reason, just that one statement is so fucking unwholesome to me.
But again, like that unsavory. One line has a whole novel in it. That novel has yet to be written. But just a one throwaway line will get you an entire plot hook.
Like, that is the idea of, like, oh, there's too many people here. Let me put some people on the ground, standing up. It's just like, oh, what?
You don't lay them to rest. They've got to stand there for the
Like,
rest of
you'd assume, as a meta, as a meta D&D player, I'd be like, that's, you shouldn't have dead people in the city. I don't know, you know, that just feels like a bad idea. But nope, the people in this world, they're just like, fuck it, just
Yeah.
put them anywhere, you know,
Yeah.
put them in shoes, put them in the floor, put them in your basement, put them in your house, put them under your bed. I don't give a damn what you do with them. It's just.
And predictably, you know, you stick them vertically under the fucking street, and it turns out they're having problems with undead.
I know of one woman. I won't say if this woman is in Waterdeep or some other city, who sleeps with her dead husband's corpse. She just casts gentle repose on it so that the corpse never decomposes or goes cold. And she just sleeps with the dude's just been dead in that bed for years and years.
Yeah, you gotta put her down. You gotta put her
Holy
down.
shit.
You gotta put her down. You gotta be like, hey, what's going on, sweetheart? I know things are tough. And you gotta just walk in there, some guy with a really big sword, and be like, hey, let me just take this from here. And then you just sink, head off, because that's just dangerous. It's dangerous. That's just.
Let me just slide right in here, and there we go. We got the head, and we'll be off.
It's a quick decapitation, and you're like, you know what, man? It was really gruesome. It was grisly, but I had to do what I had to do. She's clearly insane, and she has magic that just leads to bad stuff. You know, have you guys ever heard of Vecna? And then you just leave.
You have a moment to talk about Vecna.
What's crazy is a
No,
lot of
it's not
people
that
probably
conversation. I'm
don't.
here to destroy your husband's body and possibly put you down while we're at it.
It's just so weird. Isn't wait if Vecna? No, Vecna's from Ravenloft, if I'm not mistaken, right? He's not from the Forgotten Realms.
Vecna is
He
from
exists there. He's been
Greyhawk,
there.
I believe, originally from Greyhawk,
Yeah.
but there gets a point in your career as a powerful person within the Dungeons and Dragons multiverse where you stop belonging to any one setting. You originate from one setting, but you're
You
just
just
kind
go
of
all over the
there now.
place.
Yeah,
Yeah, I
think of it
think.
like, think of what's his name? Aseric. Aseric's been goddamn everywhere. Up and down the street. And he's just like, oh, weren't you like from like Greyhawk? And he's like, I was. And then I just started just going all the other places.
Yeah,
Yeah,
so
you get
Vecna.
Mordenkainen, Tensa, Melf, and all those dudes that have spells named after them. They're not from the Forgotten Realms. They just got
Yeah,
so
none of them
powerful,
are.
they showed up one day and was like, "By the way, here's a new spell."
Yeah, Vecna is originally from Greyhawk. In the, I want to say it was the Mind Flayer episode, we talked about the concept of like the crystal spheres and how
The
they're situated.
phlogiston.
Yeah, and then you've got the, you know, the this little triangle where you can get to one. I forget what how the triangle was laid out. I had like a little drawing, and I think I
It's a
accidentally threw it away
one-way
for that.
path between the three of
Yeah,
them.
I think
yeah,
it's
you
my
can.
screensaver. There's a triangle. So there's Faerun,
Yeah.
Mistra, and I think there's Midgard. But the triangle also goes. You can go from Ravenloft to Greyhawk, and then from Ravenloft also to Faerun. But you can't go from Greyhawk to Dragonlance.
Well, I
They
think when
don't
it,
connect.
yeah, I think when it comes to Ravenloft, though, Ravenloft is its own like pocket thing. You can get to Ravenloft, I think, from anywhere,
And
but
you can go anywhere
getting out
from
is the
Ravenloft.
problem.
Because you can
Yeah,
go
I
from,
don't recommend
right?
taking that portal to Ravenloft because
Yeah,
getting
don't go
out,
there.
it's a whole
Yeah,
different thing.
the mists ain't gonna let you out. But yeah, Vecna definitely from Greyhawk and ascended to godhood, so yeah,
It's so
it's
weird because, and then there's the two worlds that people can't really get into. There's one that's like damn near impossible to get into, and there's one that's like real. Like it's Eberron, you can get there, but it's hard. And then like there's Aphids that you just straight can't get
Yeah,
in.
Dark Sun.
it won't let you in, and it's for a good reason why they won't let you in, but everybody like wants to get in. And it's like, I don't think you really, I think you think you want to go there.
I don't think you know what you're dealing with when it comes to Dark Sun. Like, you go into that world and you're going to be lucky to be carrying around a steel weapon.
Like, you're going to get there and you're going to like use magic and you're like, whoa, magic doesn't work here.
Yep.
And that wizard's going to be really upset because now he's just a squishy man with valuables on. And the three queens going to kidnap, eat, and kill him.
So, excuse me. When it comes to Waterdeep structure, we've talked a lot about how it's very dirty. There's a lot of corruption and crime and stuff like that. You know, we've obviously mentioned that we're playing on the City Watch. But who's at the top? Who runs everything in Waterdeep? Who runs Bartertown?
Oh, my wife.
My
queen. My wife, my queen.
You know, it really depends who you're asking. There's this interesting three-way equilibrium between the Lords of Waterdeep, the Nobles, and the Mercantile Guilds. So the guilds are powerful. We're talking like the mouse level powerful. You know how after Donald Trump, for example, got kicked off Twitter and all these other social media sites started popping up, there was Gab and Parler and Mines, and then all those conglomerates got together and started shutting them down. Gab came back. I'm pretty sure Gab is a dumpster fire. I'm on Mines, which is really, it's an interesting place. I should be there more often, but it's that sort of thing. Like, if you shaft one of the guilds, all of the guilds close ranks to shaft you. So you're like, okay. I'm opening a tavern. Now this is in Dragon Heist, for example, where the player characters are given an option to open a tavern, and they're like, look, you don't have to buy your liquor from the vineyards and vintners and distillers guild, if that's the right name, but if you don't, suddenly the butchers guild won't sell you meat, the roofers guild and the carpenters guild won't come around and repair your stuff, and any freelancers who might come along and go, well, I'll do it for you. Suddenly they're not getting any work either. No one's going to sell them materials. It's a big commercial monopoly. There was a time in Waterdeep's history where the guilds ran everything. The Council of Guilds were the Lords of Waterdeep. And on that, the Lords of Waterdeep is a really fascinating system because there's usually anywhere between secret. A dozen to two dozen of them.
And they're all secret. They're all secret. You were saying there's just the one that's openly a Lord of Waterdeep.
And that is Lariel Silverhand.
Yeah, it's Lariel. My favorite, my queen.
They wear masks and robes, and the masks and robes are magically empowered so that it doesn't matter if you're a halfling, a dwarf, a Goliath. They're like stormtroopers, you know. They all stand the same height. They all walk with the same gait. They all have the same build. It is literally impossible, just by looking or by magically scrying, to know who a Lord of Waterdeep is. Consequently, it's a big sport amongst anyone rich enough to spare the time to make guesses and spread rumors.
Yeah, who's a lord and who isn't.
Yeah, like that half, the fast-talking, high-pitched halfling who tugged on one of your coats and was like, you guys should probably check that out. He could have been a Lord of Waterdeep. Or some unfortunate, like, the Tenzo got in some poor woman's face, she's dead! Like, send a hysterical. She could be a Lord of Waterdeep. And like, the lords...
Poor woman.
Like, any one of the lords usually has knows who about another three or four lords are. But when a lord dies and the rest of the lords go, oh, that's who they were, they make a point of selecting somebody from the same sort of social standing, the same social strata. Like, someone from a homeless community could be one of the Lords of Waterdeep.
Hmm.
So that's a really interesting thing that, okay, it sounds like, oh, these secretive unelected people control everything, but it's like these secretive unelected people are chosen by the rest to represent every strata of society. And then you've got the nobles. And you know, some of the nobles may be lords. Pretty much all of the nobles are trying to jockey their way into becoming lords. And it's like each one of those keeps the other two in check. Or it might be better to say any two of those in concert keep the third in check.
It's a their own checks and balances system. Sween, I wanted to ask you because we're from a player's perspective, knowing what you do about Waterdeep and all this, you know, what we've been talking about, where do you want to go in Waterdeep? Where are the places that you would like your character to see, the things you want him to do?
Well, I personally want to get involved with Xanadar. Obviously, I am coming there looking for trouble instantly, and I want to see what that gang is about. I love the lore. First of all, I love the, because Waterdeep is huge, but in a way it's also vast, because lower water, like there's Waterdeep, and then there's like below it, where like there are dungeons, and like the whole entire Dungeon of the Mad Mage is below a part of Waterdeep. And then there's under that, which is the Underdark, where there are known mind flayers and like drow. So I just love the idea of like just how much is layered upon that city, and I really want to get involved with a lot of the criminal sects in there and like in the city, because I just like the idea of a group of criminals. That just sounds hilarious to me. It sounds like fun.
I'm not really sure what time period we're in terms of like in game. Is Xanathar still around?
The Xanathar Guild has had a presence in Waterdeep for as long as almost anyone in the city can remember. There's been rumors about if Xanathar, I should say, is a beholder, or if Xanathar is a title held by a beholder. Rumors, as always, people love to speculate, but the Xanathar Guild has been around. Like, so in terms of time frame, I deliberately chose to go, I think, 6 years into the future from the latest D&D adventure. So Descent into Avernus, Dragon Heist, even, I'm pretty sure, even Rime of the Frost Maiden, that all takes place right at the very, very end of the 15th century Dale Reckoning. So I decided, you know, if we're at like 1494 DR, let's just go to 1500 and, you know, new podcast, new adventures, new century. It also gives us this opportunity to say, well, this is the turn of the century. This is where new cultural epochs start happening. We can play around with the city.
Yeah. So in fifth edition, there's a book for Xanathar, isn't there? Or there's a book with Xanathar's name on it. What's it for?
Xanathar's guide to everything, right?
It is indeed. They're technically supplementary books. So Xanathar's Guide to Everything, Tash's Cauldron of Everything, and I believe also
there's Volo's Guide to Foes.
Volo's Guide to Monsters.
Okay.
Morden Cannon's Tome of Foes.
And then there's Morden Cannon's Tome of Foes. There you go. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. So that they, particularly Xanathar's and Tash's, they're supplementary books. They add subclasses, they add items, they have chapters on creating patrons for adventurers parties. Patrons in the sense of, I'm hiring you to do this for me. I like what you did. I want you to keep working for me. They're now bankrolled.
Did Wizards actually write that book as if it was some sort of like from Xanathar's point of view?
There's excerpts from him in it.
Okay,
There are
cool.
excerpts from Xanatar himself.
I can dig
Xanatar
that.
often, there's little notes, like almost like sticky notes added into the book. So there'll be Xanatar giving his comments on certain things.
I dig it.
It's a fun little glimpse into the mind of the Mad Tyrant.
I
Uh,
dig it.
Xanathar's
I
in
like the idea of
particular has a
beholders.
great chapter called This Is Your Life, and if you're struggling with a backstory or there's elements of your backstory that you just don't care about enough, like it's not critical to what you want to do, it's got tables and you can roll a backstory from scratch if you want.
That's kind of cool.
It's really, really, really cool. Xanathar's guide is really, really, really helpful. And I like his excerpts because, like, you can tell how frantic of a mind he is. He's a beholder. That's just how their nature. They're crazy. But, like, it's, like, sort of, like, him, like, worrying about something else. But it's, like, also, this is a thing, too. And, like, on his page, it has, like, three different sticky notes reviewing, like, several different possibilities about how they can avoid death based on these things, because that's the beholder's, like, light. They just think everyone's trying to kill them all the time.
From birth, something is always trying to kill them. Like
Yeah.
they're born from the dreams of other beholders, and when a beholder dreams another beholder into existence, they pretty much immediately start fighting. So like
Yeah, they
from the
can't come in
moment
contact.
they're quote unquote born, they're fighting for their lives. Like this is neurosis. This is like clinical levels of paranoia. It's great. Talk about your childhood trauma.
Yeah,
I love it.
that's crazy. Yeah, the
I love them. They're so funny.
wow. So when it comes to my character in Waterdeep, I designed my character around Joaquin, and I wanted to do Joaquin because Joaquin is such a is almost like an integral deity, but no one talks about Joaquin. You know, no one talks about the Joaquinar or anything like it, because she's the goddess of commerce and trade and all this other stuff. And then out of left field, her weapon, because all the gods have their own like special weapons and stuff, is the fucking nunchuck. Like, I want to play a cleric or a paladin that uses nunchucks. And that was kind of like where I started. But then, you know, as I'm building out this character, I'm like, you know, I think I want to do, I think I want to have her be from a financial crimes kind of division of the City Watch, which would be, you know, in the richer parts of the city. So eventually I want to be able to kind of get back to that area of the city and kind of get back to some of that stuff, and maybe settle some old scores, you know, the case that got me bounced down into the south and all that stuff. So
That may or may not have appeared in one of the broadsheets of Waterdeep more recently in the lead up to the campaign.
I saw that actually. Yeah, I was going through it. I thought it was a pretty cool little tidbit that you put in there.
Well, I very much want Law and Order to be like a multimedia, multi-platform delivery. So, there may or may not be important hints embedded in amongst those broadsheets somewhere. And, at some point, the editor of that particular broadsheet may become a contact. Or maybe you guys will reach out to them at some point. So.
We gotta go and beat him down for a source.
That'd be great.
I'll never give up my source. Well, you better. Oh man,
Anonymity of
I'm
sources
sure
and
you
freedom of
will.
the press is not in the Waterdavian Constitution.
I'm really looking forward to that stuff. I'm having a lot of fun with it for people who haven't been tuning in to Law and Order. It's very amusing. It's got video. We don't do video on Legends and Lore because we just want it to be kind of like a discussion. You know, we don't want to, you know, I've mentioned this several times. We don't like to sit there and just go and feed people the lore and You've got videos on YouTube for that. Like, if you want to know, like, every, like, little nitpicky thing about, you know, fucking Asmodeus or whatever, you can find that. But we want to have, like, a conversation and just talk about the things that we really enjoy. That's one of the big things that, that Sween wanted out of this, was to just be able to talk about the stuff that we like, you know?
Yeah. No, there's a guy on YouTube, I think his name is Jordan, it's like J-O-R-D-F-H-A-N. He says, hello, my name is Jordan, the PH is silent. That guy's, I've watched a lot of his history videos just because as I was studying Waterdeep, I also wanted to deep dive the entire cosmology of D&D because, you know, everything eventually worked its way back to, like, this great cosmic struggle between good and evil and order and chaos, which in many ways good and order and evil and chaos are very much tied in together. The only thing that I found, because you mentioned Asmodeus, that I found unforgivable with Jordan is he pronounces it Asmodeus, and every time he said it, I just, it was like nails on a chalkboard, man.
You say, oh my gosh, okay, well, it's going to sound bad, but I say Asmodeus as well, personally, when I say it.
Oh, I say Asmodeus.
When I say it, I say Asmodeus. But knowing that that has brought great pain to you, I will try not to ever again.
We can do another Google, but I do remember, like,
I don't think the etymology of the name
Asmodeus.
I don't think, like, you're wrong.
What language does the word Asmodeus come from? How do you pronounce those phonemes in that language? I must know.
So as it turns out, both Asmodeus and Asmodeus are actually both correct. You can use either one.
I refuse.
You sort of acknowledge the fact
according to the wiki, you can use either one and they're considered to be correct pronunciations. Asmodeus, or Asmodeus.
I'm sure it is correct that people within Faerun incorrectly pronounce the name Asmodeus.
I'm going to say Asmodeus because that's how I've always heard it, you know? There are certain things, like certain things where I know, even if you told me it's actually Asmodeus, it would take me a long time to get into the habit of saying it that way.
Yeah.
For instance, there is a monster that is a land shark, and it's supposed to be pronounced Beulet, but I say Beulet. Because it's spelt Beulet.
I know what you're talking about. I know what you're talking about, yeah.
Right. But according to Gygax, who wrote the damn thing, they're called Beulets. So while I acknowledge that this is the correct way to say it, I also acknowledge that it's a stupid ass way to say it, and I'm not fucking saying it that way. Fuck it. It's a Beulet.
I regret to inform you, but I believe, and again, it really comes down to what words did Gygax use to inspire naming the creature, but I think, because English is a Frankenstein of a language, right?
Yes.
There's Nordic words, there's Germanic words, there's Frankish words, there's Gaelic words, Celtic words, and they say white people have no culture. We have dozens of them. And this one, I believe, is Frankish, i.e. French. So it's like a wait, do we have baguettes or baguettes? Now I'm just confused and therefore angry.
Yeah.
There's always more questions, dude. You're never going to get to the bottom of this.
I ran a Pathfinder campaign for a little while that I wanted something that felt different. So I was doing a predominantly city campaign, and it was in a city that used almost entirely French stuff, you know? And so every now and then I would have to say something French, and I actually can pronounce a lot of French things with relative accuracy because where I grew up mostly in Maine, there's a lot of French Canadians, but French Canadians also get a lot of French wrong. And so I tend to fall into that kind of category where I'll nail it sometimes, and other times it's like, I don't know what this says. But you'll get like these long ass names or words that have got an E, A, U, and X, and that is ooh.
Yeah. What? Like faux.
What? My grandmother is a Hispanic. She's a Caribbean Hispanic, and she mm-hmm. speaks Latin. And my grandmother has always been like, French is the worst language because it doesn't make sense. And I was just like, Grandma, it can't be that bad of a language. She was like, no, I'm it's not bad. Exaggerating. I'm not being rude. I'm not being disrespectful to the French. It does not make sense for a Latin language to sound like that.
Yeah, it just got bonus letters for no reason. Bonus. But it's not nearly as bad as like Irish, where they'll put a letter in there and be like, no, that makes a B sound, and it's like that's an S though. That's an S. That makes a B sound. Like, you ever seen the name Siobhan? There's Siobhan. No way.
Siobhan. Siobhan. Siobhan, that's Siobhan.
oh my god.
Or Sinead, or just any of those. Like, you get some weird
Saoirse. Saoirse Ronan is constantly having to explain how to pronounce her name. Because mm-hmm. it's spelt phonetically, you'd think it was like Saoirse or something.
Mm. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a wild one, but it's not based off of Latin, so it kind of gets like sort of a pass. I don't know. But
that's
yeah,
why in terms of such a mess. English is Germanic and Latin. And mm-hmm. it's like, what the hell? What were they thinking? Yeah. And my grandma's like, they weren't. That's the thing. That's the point. They were just trying to make a language. Yeah. America, the UK was like, we'll do what we want. Yeah. We made whatever this fucking dumpster fire that is English.
Yeah, but the whole campaign, I had to be... I would say something in like French, and then the players would be like, the what now? And then I'd just say the English version, you know? So instead of there being like quarters, there were quartiers, you know, and they'd be like, the what? And I'd be like, it's a quarter. It's the, you know, the scholarly quarter, you know? And they're, fucking place. The Hydra quarter. Okay. All right. You know, just stuff like that. And then I would do this thing where I would practice between sessions, having a goofy ass like French accent. And I got okay at it. I probably couldn't do it on command. I'd have to sit there and practice again, but I was doing all right for a little while. But yeah, city campaigns are fantastic. That's one of the reasons why when you pitched this one in Waterdeep, I was like, man, that is, not only is it a city campaign, it's an iconic city.
I'm excited. Yeah. That's exciting. I want to actually run a campaign for us in Sharn as well. Because that, I know that's a huge, it's a huge gamble to take on, because Sharn, like Waterdeep and Baldur's Gate, is massive and mm-hmm. just layered. And so I actually find a lot of similarities between Sharn and Waterdeep, actually. The more I look into it, mm-hmm. those cities have a lot of like, oh, these are just like, I think they're very just meccas of areas.
Yeah.
But it's a lot, and I'm excited to do that. I want to run one for us all, and it's going to be zany.
Yeah, I love the Waterdeep thing. Obviously, we cannot cover all of Waterdeep in one episode. It's very possible we're gonna have a Waterdeep 2, a Waterdeep 3, or something in the future. We'll space them out so we're not just sitting here, you know, we're not just sitting here like circle jerk into Waterdeep, because the people are gonna listen to it, you know. But so I guess, you know, we'll start to kind of wrap this up. I try not to keep the episodes too long, unless we get people start telling us that we need to, you know, make things longer, then I'll think about it. But is there anything that you would like to plug before we call it?
All Watchmen are bastards.
All Watchmen are bastards, man.
Yeah, no, like we can probably do a sneak announcement. You know, we for those who do catch this before episode 4 goes live, we're affiliates now.
Yes.
Yes, we are.
I forgot to mention that.
Yeah, look, Law and Order is pretty much my baby now. It's what I'm working on. Anything I plug will be Law and Order based at this stage. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I guess we can plug Crip. He went out and opened for Doug Stanthope. That's amazing.
Yes, it was fantastic.
You know, I'm always here to plug anything that any of my cast members do because I just want all of us to, you know, water deep to the moon.
Yeah, we're going to be getting Donovan in a future episode, too. I've been kind of like batting it around with him, seeing kind of like what he gets really like revved up about, and what he wants to talk about, you know, because we're all over the map. We're not just doing D&D. We're going to do Marvel stuff. I kind of want to dip into some like maybe some anime because Sweeney and I are both very opinionated when it comes to anime.
Very and opinionated.
It
I get
always provokes arguments with us.
People get violent towards me about my opinions of anime, and I love it. People come after my fucking livelihood. I love it. It's so funny.
Look, like, I can so piss stupid. Off any number of people by saying actually like Cape shit. I like the Marvel films. They're fun.
I love them too.
All right, we'll get into that later. You know? we can talk about the entire metaphysical cosmology of the Dungeons and Dragons universe at a later time. That's how I got myself into uni. That was my entry essay.
Awesome.
Hit me up. And thank you. Thanks for the chat, boys.
It was great having you. I hope to have you again in the future. Sweden, you wanna take us on out?
All right, well, thank you guys for tuning in to another wonderful episode of Lore and Order. Thank our guest Apod for coming in and being fantastic and knowledgeable as always. Thank you for my co-host Renzuo for being the pretty much the flagship of this thing, and I'm Thomas Sweeney. We'll be seeing you guys next episode. Have a great one.